This is Louisiana Considered on WWNO in New Orleans and WRKF in Baton Rouge. I'm Diane Mack. Just ahead on today's show, a musical extravaganza. We'll talk with members of the Jordan family as they pay tribute to late jazz masters Edward Kit Jordan and Elvin Batiste. And the Musaica Chamber Ensemble takes us on an adventurous journey as it closes its 18th season. But first, sanctuary cities have become targets of Republican lawmakers across the country in recent years. Now Louisiana's legislature is considering a measure that would ban parishes and cities from adopting the policies. Bobby Jean Missick, reporter at Verite News, has been tracking the proposal since it was introduced, and she joins us now. Hi, Bobby Jean. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
First, can you remind listeners what a sanctuary city is and what cities or parishes have them in place?
So a sanctuary city is a municipality that has laws or policies that limit federal immigration enforcement. And they're called sanctuaries because some may say they protect undocumented immigrants from being taken into immigration custody and ultimately being deported. According to the Center for Immigration Studies, New Orleans is the only place in Louisiana that has sanctuary city policies. And immigrant activists have told me, while this is a small relief, it isn't such a great source of protection, given that once they leave the parish, those protections are no longer.
Now, the proposal up for debate in Baton Rouge is Senate Bill 208. Can you explain what it would do if passed?
So if Senate Bill 208 passes, it would ban parishes, cities, and towns from adopting policies that are meant to prohibit local law enforcement from enforcing civil federal immigration law. So they wouldn't be investigating civil immigration violations on behalf of ICE or other federal agencies.
And how would that impact places like New Orleans, which already has a sanctuary policy in place?
Well, so New Orleans is kind of a special case. Its sanctuary policies are in place due to federal court orders. The New Orleans Police Department is under a federal consent decree, and its immigration policy falls under that. The NOPD is mandated to provide the same level of service to every resident in the city, regardless of things like immigration status. And for the Orleans Parish Sheriff's Office, you know, they are not allowed to hold immigrants in the jail for immigration and customs enforcement. You know, they have come up with a policy that they would deny these requests for holds. And that's based on a federal lawsuit after two men were held in the jail for months each on these ICE holds. And how that impacts New Orleans is tricky because those agencies need to follow these federal court-ordered policies. So experts that I've talked to have said that this would basically put them in conflict with federal and state law. Who do they adhere to? They'll have to figure that out, and that might have to be figured out in the courts.
We're talking with Bobby Jean Missick, reporter with Verite News, about a proposal in the Louisiana legislature to ban cities from adopting sanctuary policies to protect immigrants. Bobby Jean, how does this proposal fit into Governor Jeff Landry's policies on immigration and other tough-on-crime proposals he supports?
Jeff Landry has been an immigration hardliner for a long time. As state attorney general in 2016, he claimed that NOPD's immigration policy violated a federal law that blocks local law enforcement agencies from prohibiting their employees from sharing information with federal immigration agencies. This is, you know, one more law in a package of tough on crime, tough on immigration laws that, you know, criminal justice advocates, immigration justice advocates are saying, you know, all of these bills together are just going to stretch the resources of local law enforcement, stretch the resources of local jails for federal immigration agencies, and that those laws should not pertain to local law enforcement.
Where does the sanctuary city bill stand and what needs to happen for it to pass?
So the bill has passed the Senate and it's gone over to the House of Representatives and it's awaiting a hearing in the House Judiciary Committee. After that, there could be some amendments added to it. One amendment was proposed and rejected while in the Senate from Senator Duplessis from New Orleans, who wanted to just have an amendment in there saying that the local law enforcement would follow federal court orders if they were in place to protect cities like New Orleans. That was rejected, but something like that could be attached to it again before it passes.
Bobby Jean Messick, reporter with Verite News. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much.
From WWNO in New Orleans and WRKF in Baton Rouge, you're listening to Louisiana Considered. I'm Diane Mack. Support WWNO and WRKF today. WWNO just finished their fund drive, but you can still make a donation at WWNO.org. WRKF is currently in their Spring Member Fest. Make a contribution to support this show and other great programs at WRKF.org. Legendary New Orleans jazz saxophonist and music educator Edward Kidd Jordan and avant-garde jazz clarinetist Alvin Batiste are being remembered in a special tribute concert, Jazz Meets Classical, performed by the Music Alive Ensemble, featuring jazz vocalist Stephanie Jordan and classical violinist Rachel Jordan in honor of the legacy of their late father and uncle. Rachel and Stephanie join us now. Welcome to Louisiana Considered.
Oh,
thank
I'm
you,
so
Diane.
Glad.
Your dad, Kidd Jordan, and Uncle Bat Alvin Batiste were both music educators and innovative jazz musicians who were always pushing the envelope, moving the genre forward. What was it like growing up in a musical family and then choosing to follow in their musical footsteps?
Well, for me, this is Rachel. I always say that I grew up in the temple. I didn't realize that we were always constantly being surrounded and reinforced by what music does and what music can bring to your life. So my dad was always practicing and Uncle Alvin was always practicing. That's how we grew up, just constantly listening to them play and going to concerts.
Stephanie?
I just feel so grateful to be on the stage performing because I didn't necessarily know that I was following them, but I was.
Can you share some lessons you learned along the way that helped you to shape your musical careers?
For me, after I did the first Music Alive concert, we played. My uncle was there in the audience. He was saying, oh, kid, that was so good. He's saying, now what's your next thing? I just looked at him. I was like, after all of this? And then he just looked at me and said, what's your next thing? And with my dad, it was one day where I was just really tired of being in orchestra and I was tired of everything. And he said, okay, girl, well, you got to figure out what you're going to do. So if you don't go back to work, you got to find out what you can do. And I said, oh, my God. So I said, all right, I'm going back to work because this is what I really want to do. Always had dreamed of being in a symphony. And, you know, once I made it into the symphony orchestra in New Orleans, it was like everything that I wanted to do as a child was realized. And I realized that, you know, from my parents that it started with me just asking them to get lessons. And they just did everything that they could possibly do in order to make sure that we had like lessons and outside activities and things to keep our minds focused.
Steph?
I have a really interesting story experience with my dad. I remember when I had my debut performance at the Jazz and Heritage Festival, and I decided to let the band play a song before I went up. And my dad was backstage and he said, what are you doing? They called your name. And I said, well, the band is going to play one. And he said, he looked at me and he said, don't you ever do that in life again, okay? When they call your name, you go out, not your band. But he said, look, all the big timers, Nancy Wilson, Lena Horne, Aretha Franklin, when they call their name, they go out. You don't send the band out, you go out. I never got it. And I never let a band open. I always go out.
So how did the idea for this concert A tribute to friends Alvin Batiste and Edward Kidd Jordan come about. Tell us about their relationship and some highlights of their musical accomplishments.
They met at Southern University in Baton Rouge, playing in the band at Southern University. But they were more than frat brothers because they acted more like brothers. And then they became brothers-in-law because Uncle Alvin introduced my dad to my mom.
We did this performance in Houston at with a sold-out crowd at the El Dorado Room with my sister. I play in a River Oaks Chamber Orchestra in Houston, Texas. When we do my dad's music, somehow we always use Uncle Alvin's music at the same time. So we go in and out from my dad's music to Uncle Alvin's music. So it's just like a nice fit always when we're performing any one of their music. So when we're doing Uncle Alvin's music, we just go into my dad's music because it just has that kind of ethnic, grounded sound in it. And we get to experience their minds and their thrust in music all the time.
And the memories and the music and these precious men are just intertwined. And it's musical in itself.
I would agree.
Tell us more about the music, Alive Ensemble. Let's talk about what you're going to perform at this concert.
I formed Music Alive when I was playing in the symphony and the LPO because I wanted to do more. I wanted to do more chamber music. I formed the Music Alive early, you know, pre-Katrina. I think we're into our 23rd year or something like that, where we, you know, play music that I think the audience will love. Nobody exactly knows if it's classical, if it's jazz. You know, I try to get new works and new composers. So on this program, I'm featuring Jai Chatters, who's my young cousin. He's a, you know, classical composer. We also have, you know, like I said, we're doing some of my dad's music, some of Uncle Alvin's music. I have a piece that I'm also performing, and we're going to do Courtney Bryan, who just won that Genius Award on the classical segment of it. Stephanie, you tell them what you're going to be doing.
Well, I'm doing a music from Uncle Alvin. Music Came, as well as a great blues that he did called My Life is a Tree. And I think we have a little Joni Mitchell that we're doing.
Oh, yeah.
Which is beautiful. And
we got a great Brazilian guitarist that's going to be coming with us because we're going to do a lot of great Brazilian music. His name is Santos, Giovanni Santos. And 70 was the one who found it for us. So, and my brother Marlon is going to do something from the album, Flamingo. So we have a lot of great music and a lot of, you know, different kinds of music. Actually, Amy Thiville is going to be featured doing Bachiana's Brasileiras, which is one of the most beautiful pieces ever written in the world. So we have a wide variety of music and pieces that mean something to us and mean we'll have something that we can deliver to the audience. I think what Stephanie said earlier is like every time we're on stage, I think about just the honor that I have being on stage and the fact that I can just still be doing this after so long and that the audience still really loves it. So I'm just so grateful to everybody who supports us and who, you know, just loves the concept and keep coming back to hear us, you know, create and do more experimental things.
Jazz vocalist Stephanie Jordan and classical violinist Rachel Jordan. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you so much, Diane.
Pleasure's all ours.
Music Alive Ensemble's Jazz Meets Classical 2024, a tribute to friends Alvin Batiste and Edward Kidd Jordan, featuring Rachel and Stephanie Jordan, takes place on Saturday, April 20th at 7 p.m., UNO Performance Recital Hall. More info at musicaliveno.org. the Musaica Chamber Ensemble closes its 18th season, Heart and Soul, with The Soul of Music, featuring a recently rediscovered piano quintet and a world premiere quartet for oboe and string trio. Musaica violist and president Bruce Owen joins us with the details. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on, Diane.
Bruce, you are the assistant principal viola with the Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra and an instructor of viola at Loyola University College of Music. Many of Musaica's players are also affiliated with the LPO and or faculty members at Loyola, Tulane, and the University of New Orleans. This ensemble has been your pride and joy. How are you feeling as you close yet another season?
Well, I am very proud of all my colleagues for sticking with this and exploring new repertoire. We're really excited about this particular concert because this includes, of course, pieces that none of us have played before because they're brand new, and it includes one piece that we actually did on our very first season.
The ensemble is known for presenting eclectic and adventurous programs. Tell us more. Which works will audiences experience, and how did you go about choosing these pieces?
It's mostly American composers, although there is one French composer. There are two works by Black composers, two works by women composers, and two works by living composers, both of whom will actually be at the concert. And we wanted to explore kind of what lies beneath the notes that are being played. So we picked these pieces by composers who are influenced by other styles of music, such as spirituals or hymns or dances, funk, jazz, and blues. They are influenced by other composers who they really respected, such as Ravel and Stravinsky or Mahler and Shostakovich. Or sometimes they were just inspired by some instrument they really wanted to write for. So let me tell you about the pieces that we're playing. We are doing a piece by William Grant Still. He lived from 1895 to 1978. He wrote a piece in 1962 called Preludes. It's for flute, piano, and string quintet. And we are doing the second movement of this work. You really hear the influence of blues and spirituals in this one piece. He is known as the Dean of Afro-American Composers. He was the first African-American composer to have an opera produced by the New York City Opera. He was the first Black conductor to conduct a major orchestra, which was 1936, the Los Angeles Philharmonic. And this is more interesting, closer to home. He was, in 1955, the first Black conductor to conduct an orchestra in the Deep South, which was the New Orleans Philharmonic Orchestra, which, of course, is the predecessor to the LPO.
Yes.
Another piece, this is also brand new for all of us. We're doing Florence Price, her first piano quintet in A minor. She lived from 1887 to 1953. And this piece is right at the end of her life, 1952. It was discovered among a massive number of manuscripts that were in an abandoned home in Illinois, which had been her summer home, apparently. They found these pieces in 2009, which is more than 50 years after she died.
Wow.
And this particular piano quintet is really typical of her late romantic style. It's influenced by the sounds of spirituals and hymns from her life. It's got a third movement called the Juba, which was a dance that she includes in a lot of other movements of her pieces, including her first symphony. And she was also known for being the first Black female composer to have a symphony performed by a major American orchestra, which was in Chicago Symphony, 1933. She was very prolific. She wrote more than 300 compositions, including four symphonies, four concertos, and a lot of other chamber music, including a second piano quintet, which maybe we'll play someday. The one piece we're doing by a French composer is a sonata for flute and harp by Jean-Michel Damas. He lived from 1928 to 2013, so he died not that long ago. This piece is from 1964. He was a composer, conductor, and concert pianist who wrote his first piece at the age of 9 and won a prize when he was 15 for a quintet that he wrote. His mother was a prominent French harpist, and she inspired him to write a lot of his works for harp. He was also influenced by other composers like Ravel and Stravinsky. And the piece that we're doing, it really expects a lot of virtuosity from both the flutist and harpist.
And there is a world premiere by an often featured composer that's close to your heart. Tell us about the composer, Molly O'Meara, and this work.
Molly O'Meara has had 4 pieces done by us. This is her oboe quartet and was just finished like a couple of weeks ago, literally. Oh. It is 2 short movements called the Tumbleweed Waltz and Spring Comes Round. Tumbleweeds are a big feature in the landscape, this desert landscape of New Mexico where she lives. Molly O'Meara happens to be my mother. Obviously, because she knows me, she's got a connection, but we play it not because she's my mother, or not, at least not just for that reason, but because she writes really great music.
Yeah.
We are doing one piece that we actually did on our very first season, and this is actually by Dave Anderson, and this is his quintet for oboe, clarinet, violin, viola, and bass, which was written in 1996. And I have to say, I met Dave back when we were both students at the College Conservatory of Music in Cincinnati. We actually played the Trout Quintet by Schubert together. And he told me just a few days ago when we were rehearsing, he said, you know, when I wrote this quintet, and this was right before he came to New Orleans to be principal bassist of the LPO, he said, I was thinking when I wrote this that it would be really great to play this with you someday. And as a matter of fact, we did it on our first season. We did the first couple of movements at the beginning of the pandemic when the LPO had to do video concerts and stream things. So we did it as part of an Orpheum Sessions series. But we really wanted to get back and play the whole thing again. He was very influenced by Mahler and Shostakovich and funk and jazz and blues. So it's a really, really fun piece. And I'm so happy to be doing it one more time.
Sounds like it's going to be a real treat.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this concert.
Musica president and violist Bruce Owen. It's been a fun chat.
Thank you so much.
The Musica Chamber Ensemble presents its final concert of the season with 2 New Orleans performances, Monday, April 22nd, 7:30 p.m. at the UNO Performing Arts Center Recital Hall, and Tuesday, April 23rd, 7:30 p.m. at St. Charles Avenue Presbyterian Church, 1545 State Street. More info at musaica.org. That's musaica.org. From WWNO in New Orleans and WRKF in Baton Rouge, you've been listening to Louisiana Considered. I'm Diane Mack. I'd like to thank our guest, Verite News reporter Bobby Jean Missick, jazz vocalist Stephanie Jordan, and classical violinist Rachel Jordan, and Musica violist and president Bruce Owen. Our managing producer is Alana Schreiber. Our contributing producers are Matt Bloom and Adam Voss. We receive production and technical support from Garrett Pittman and our assistant producer, Aubrey Procell. You can listen to Louisiana Considered Monday through Friday at noon and 7 p.m. on this station. It's available on Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Major support for Louisiana Considered provided by Rouse's Markets, a Louisiana shopping experience, with additional support from Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation.